Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favor to ask. And that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends. And don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast. A podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Martin Rothwell. Good afternoon, Martin. I was about to say good morning, but yeah, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Yas. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, good. Really good, yeah.
Martin, I'm really excited for this one. Obviously, you know, we're going to explore a conversation that takes us out of the box of typical thinking today. But before we get to that, maybe a brief insight around who you are and what you do, and we'll go from there.
Well, first, yeah, great to be here. Thanks for the invite. Yeah, looking forward to the chat. So, I'm currently... or for the past sort of 10 years, I've worked at Sheffield Hallam University, lecturer and research, focus on sport coaching and performance. So really interested in like coaching, practice design, that type of thing, and could conduct research in that area as well. And I've been a coach probably, I don't know, 15 years, maybe in rugby league. So a little bit different to, I know you work in football, Yas, but yeah, a bit different to that. But yeah, and just worked across the pathway, really. Started with coaching children and then sort of moved along the pathway more so with adults more recently. Yeah, so yeah, just a range of different experiences, really, I suppose.
I guess, you know, there's a lot in there. I think first and foremost, it's important for us to understand that, you know, how much we can maybe learn from coaches of different sports and different backgrounds, and what that kind of, you know, I think quite often we can be quite segregated, can't we, across the different sports, but there's actually so much good stuff going across it. So before we get into that side of things, what took you down the path of academia?
So that being in a job interview. Yeah, that's a good question. I suppose what it was, I could pinpoint it actually. When would it have been now? Say 2012, I was working for the Rugby Football League, and I was running a national project where we were looking at changing the game that 7 to 11-year-olds played. So I think you guys in football have done something similar. I think it was, actually, I know it was Nick Levett at the time. So I used to speak to him quite a bit about the challenges he was experiencing doing a similar project. So, yeah, essentially, we're trying to change the game for 7 to 11-year-olds just to make it more inclusive, more opportunities to sort of touch the ball, this sort of thing. So making it essentially more child-centred. And I commissioned a research project with Leeds Beckett. And I really got interested just in more the research side. At the same time, actually, linked to your previous point about sort of cross-pollination between sports. I was doing a master's degree at UCLan, and there was a load, like we had motorsport coaches, hockey, field hockey, basketball, a whole range of different sports. So I was getting more interested in academia, obviously the academic sort of literature around coaching, quite vast. So just started to develop a real interest. And then working with Leeds Beckett on this commission project, this research project, it sort of really ignited my sort of interest even further. So, and then from there, yeah, then I got a role at Sheffield Hallam. So yeah, I suppose that's it really. That's how I sort of got more interest in academia and wanted to work there.
And I think it's good. You know, I think it's great that, you know, there's so many different avenues in which we can kind of move into as, you know, a coach and practitioners, and how we link the research to that. Because obviously, you know, long gone are the days now where it was just about the coaching qualification. It's about continue developing and getting those other bits in there. So I guess, you know, from that standpoint, I think it's really important to understand there is so many different areas that we can kind of explore. And in particular, conversation that I've been having with a lot of people recently is that not every coach has to do everything. And we're all going to have, you know, kind of areas of interest and preferences, and it's okay to have that, but also it's okay to, for us to kind of become maybe, if you like, specialists in different areas. And I think that's definitely one of the things that I've said that the big changes within the coach education over the last 10 years, certainly in football, have kind of led towards, where we have got a bit of a landscape where there's different specialist coaches across different areas of the game, whether that be, you know, working with 7 to 11s in the foundation phase, whether it be working with, you know, older players, or whether that actually just be, you know, specific phases of the game. So I guess from that standpoint, what are the biggest changes that you've seen in your pathway since you started coaching?
Yeah, well, it's a great point, because I think sometimes coaching, or the profession of coaching, which I know it's quite young, is done a bit of a disservice, because it certainly, if you work in a performance environment, you need to have, well, the list is endless, but you need to understand strength and conditioning, physiology, psychology, biomechanics, skill acquisition, you know, the list goes on and on. Like, so in response to your question, I think it's an appreciation, or from my perspective, appreciation of all the different sub-disciplines that clearly you're not going to be an expert in across all of them, but you need to be aware of different things, because, you know, an individual or a team's development is multifaceted. It isn't just getting better at maybe what we, you know, a traditional sense of technical skills. It's a whole range of different things. You know what I mean? So I just think what I've seen is probably there's more of appreciation of the sort of multidisciplinary perspective on improving performance. Yeah. But I think that's a big challenge. Our coaches cope with that and deal with it, certainly at a performance end. Yeah.
So let's talk about that a little bit. And, you know, some of the challenges that do exist, because obviously, you know, I can appreciate, you know, the research element side of it. You know, having gone through doing a master's recently myself, and we're definitely seeing that, certainly in football, and I'm assuming it would be not too different in rugby as well. The generations of coaches seem to be getting younger and younger. There seems to be more people getting sports coaching degrees or some sort of degree related to coaching. I guess the education piece is so different, to the point where, like I said, you know, we had a brief kind of a conversation about this off air, and that maybe 15, 20, 30 years ago, coaches of that generation that might still be around probably had a heavily focused lens around the technical tactical pieces of the game, probably more, you know, on the physical elements of the game. Whereas now it's much more about developing the environment and creating an environment for the individual developing. What are your thoughts on that as a whole?
Another great question, Yaz. I think, I don't know, I might be a bit left field here, but I think this traditional idea where, I suppose, high performance, I'm not just talking football or rugby, I'm just across sports. I think this classical focus on like learning and acquiring skills, I don't know. I'm not so sure that's maybe the, how do I phrase this? I think sometimes we might be looking in the wrong area or focusing on developing these skills or acquiring these skills that are not necessarily going to improve a player's ability to play football, netball, hockey, whatever it might be. And I think, my persuasion or bias would be towards more developing people that understand how to play the game better, better synergies between individuals, between opposition players. So I'm specifically talking invasion sports, team sports. Yeah. So I think traditionally, or we do see a strong focus on this idea that we can acquire a skill that would make us better. And what I tend to see a lot of is then what that might manifest in practice is that we spend a lot of time focusing on these individual skills out of context. And I think that's a big problem for developing players, which I don't know, that sort of answers a part of your question, but sorry, was you going
to... I was just going to say, I'm just thinking out loud then, you know, it seems not too dissimilar to how I kind of view things, in the sense that, effectively, correct me if I'm wrong, you're saying is, you know, traditionally we have this view that, you know, it should be kind of, there's a lot of focus around the individual skills, you know, possibly in an unopposed context, where there's limited to no kind of engagement with the with what, you know, what I often look at as or refer to as game-like variables. And it's just almost, well, if those things don't exist, then how do we get the players to truly understand the importance of it? And, you know, I've actually got a view that it's not to say that those unopposed kind of practices don't have a place necessarily, because I think they do. But, you know, the idea that I always kind of throw out is, well, it has a benefit, it has a place, but in my opinion and my experience, there's better ways of working. And the analogy I always use is, why would I want to move at 10 miles an hour when I can potentially move at 30 on a rocky road, as opposed to 10 miles out on a smooth road, right? It might be bumpy, it might be there, but guess what? Eventually I'm going to get there. And if it might not look as pretty, but then is the game really that pretty in the first place? And then you go back to the idea about invasion game. Something really interesting, the language that you used, it was about developing a better understanding of how to play the game. Develop, you know, better synergy. So just give us a bit of an example of what you mean by that, and what does that look like in practice?
Yeah, sure. So, if I may go back a little bit. So, I mean, we've been writing about this in our skill acquisition group at Sheffield Hallam. And I read a really interesting paper recently by a chap called Raphael Paul. So, and he sort of challenged this traditional notion of how we might develop players. So this technique sort of orientated approach, and it sort of proposed a problem: is it training or synergizing? And I would really agree with that. And maybe what that would look like in practice. So, or to sort of develop better synergies, or sort of better players that better understand how to play the game. So a colleague we work with, or we sort of chat with quite a bit at Man City, Darren Hughes, he talks about, you know, developing game intelligence and things like occupying space, when to occupy space, when not to. And I just don't think you can develop those types of attributes in players through certain practices. So, you know, it's understanding when we might need to take more of a what we would call a global approach, where you might be constraining practice in a certain way, or more of a local approach where we're trying to encourage maybe different skills through sort of principles of play, or, you know, getting players to work out things for themselves. So yeah, that's how that would manifest in practice, definitely. So, you know, because if you think about like any invasion sport, it's always constrained or globally constrained. What I mean is from the top down. So like, you play football, one team goes that way, one team goes that way, and you've got to get the ball in the net, and there's an offside rule. And then, you know, there's certain other rules that constrain how people will engage with that game. But then I think sometimes as coaches, we layer that up, we make it more or less complex. So I certainly met, although it was a long time ago, when I used to play rugby, you know, if we think about the global constraints on the game, pretty similar to football. But then coaches would overcomplicate that and you just became lost in a really complicated way of playing. But when you sort of bring it back to the nuts and bolts, you catch a ball and you run forward and you try and evade people to put the ball down over a line. Do you know what I mean? It's not that complicated. So to answer the part of the question that you said about what that might look like, I personally would focus more on principles of play. And, you know, depending on the ability of the players or the level of the team or whatever it might be, it could simply be go forward, support a ball carrier. And it could be as complex as that in attack. And I think by doing that, over time, players do form better synergies or better interactions between each other. They start to read play, each other's play. They couple the behaviour more effectively to exploit space or, you know, I mean, I'm no expert. Well, I'm not even. What I know about football, you could write on a postage stamp. But when I watch Liverpool, for example, or Man City, I don't. And I might be wrong, and I'm sure you'll tell me if I'm, but I don't see players that necessarily have what we would call good technical skills. I see players that are engaging with the environment really highly skilled in a skillful way. The way they move, the way they're anticipating, the way they're manipulating the opposition. And quite clearly, I couldn't go and do that even if I was really fit. There's a lot going on there. And I'm not saying it isn't anything to do with controlling a football or, do you know what I mean? I just think that the way they play the game is very different.
100%. I think, you know, although you say it does take a lot, but I think the I guess where my mind's kind of going, you know, as you're speaking there is, well, really what we're pointing in the direction of is, well, we need to create situations where they can interact with these things in the first place.
Yeah.
Right. And I always, you know, it's funny you mentioned, you know, that you the way you just spoke there, because one of the things I always say, very rarely is you get to the top level and not, it's not often down to necessarily just the technical ability, because there probably isn't really much difference. Obviously, there is outliers and anomalies to this, but on a general level, you know, what a player can do in the Premier League in terms of from a technical standpoint in comparison to that maybe of a League One player, probably not that far apart. But the bit that probably kind of really, like, you know, as you just quite rightly said, it's the ability to make the decision under pressure, which takes the best players to the top, right? And sometimes those best players who are at the top might not be the most technically gifted ones, if you even want to call it that. But they just are better at maybe processing, assessing and identifying the variables that will impact and influence on their ability to perform or execute actions. And I think, you know, I talk about this all the time, whether I'm supporting coaches on courses, whether I'm mentoring coaches on a one-to-one basis. And it's just how many of the game variables are you considering? And how many of those variables are still present when you work, when you're delivering your practice? And how many, more specific, how many of those variables are presented in a way they would also be presented with on the game day? So, you know, I use the phrase like, just because we're doing a passing practice, it doesn't mean we're working on passing. Passing just takes place in the practice. So how do you make it look like the game? So one, go back to the principles of play, and I'm glad you mentioned that as well, because I'm a firm believer, if there's anywhere to start, even before you get into the technical stuff, just teach them the principles of the game, just help them understand the principles of the game. You know, whatever language works to get those messages across, but fundamentally it's an invasion game. I'm trying to get into your space, you're trying to stop me from getting in there, and vice versa. And obviously how we score in these different games, whether it be basketball, netball, football, rugby, that will be different, but I'm just trying to get into your space, right? So it's interesting, having a conversation yesterday, in fact, if you want to simplify it for young players, what can you do to escape from the players that when you've got the ball? What can you do from, you know, not letting the opposition come and attack you? All right, brilliant. Simple. It doesn't take a rocket scientist, right? But within that, well, what does that actually look like? Well, we don't need to tell the players what to do necessarily, or what the process is, but we want to certainly set an outcome for them, because I think that's where we get to a point where they can use their own creativity and their own freedom of thinking to understand, well, this does influence me, this doesn't influence me. And I think one of the careful things for me to kind of just be cautious of is that as a coach, and the phrase I like to use is when we're assessing and observing the game or whatever the practice is, are we observing and assessing through our eyes or their experience? Because what might be a challenge for Martin might not be a challenge for Yas. Or actually, Martin has a greater depth of technical ability, therefore he doesn't need 2 yards of space. He can operate within one. And it's understanding, okay, well, when does it become an influential factor and when does it not become an influential factor and to what extent? So I don't know what your thoughts are on that as a way of thinking, but...
Yeah, well, I think what you've done there, as you've probably summarised the challenges of being a coach. Like, I think where we need to get to as coaches, we need to understand or have a more of a sophisticated understanding of how to design effective practices. Now, that might sound a really, not straightforward, but maybe easy in a box type of thing, but it's so much more complicated than that. You know, so go on.
No, I was just going to say, is it really that complicated? Because I think it's complicated because, is it, well, better yet, is it complicated because it's actually complicated, or is it complicated because we're just not opening our eyes enough to consider what actually is affecting our ability to perform, if that makes sense?
Yeah, you could well be right. I mean, I suppose where I'm coming from is, you know, if we're talking football, what do you have, 15 in a team, 15 to 20 players or whatever it might be, then you've got 15 or 20 very different individuals that, you know, might have very different needs. And as you say, just because you might be designing a practice to work on a specific thing doesn't necessarily they're going to be learning or getting better at that thing that we think they're doing. Do you know what I mean? So we coaches, I mean, so I don't know, like, yeah, maybe I'm probably overcomplicating it, but I suppose the big one and what we haven't, what isn't, there's not a lot of evidence, I don't think, or there's no sort of research focus on whatever learning means or getting better at a game, or, you know, it can be any sport. So, you know, how do we know? Is there a relationship between doing certain practices and the outcome for athletes or players or whatever it might be? Do you know what I mean? I don't think we know that yet. Now, you can sort of draw conclusions if you see higher performing teams and maybe ways the engaging practice and all the other things that are going on, you know, so support off the field, nutrition, you know, physiology, all these different things. Like, you can maybe draw conclusions, but then I think, you know, if we just then start copying what maybe more successful teams are doing and trying to implement that in a different environment, I'm not so sure that's the best way anyway. You know, I mean, I don't really think that works because you've got different socio-cultural factors going on, even, you know, in the same countries. How we might think about playing football in the Midlands might be different. Our expectations might be different in London and the South. Different teams might have, as in professional teams, might have different perceptions of what football is and how it should be played. So, you know, it's quite complicated in that sense. But yeah, I get your point. The actual on the pitch or on the grass, as you call it, you know, the day-to-day practices, I don't know. But I do think we need a more sophisticated understanding of how we design constraints or use constraints or, you know, different factors to support players to get better. I do think we need that.
So I guess, you know, just building on that then, by a sophisticated understanding, are we talking about really having an understanding in a way that we can genuinely rationalise the decisions that we're making around practice design and, I guess, environment development?
From a coach's perspective, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's a good start, isn't it? So why are you doing it that way? Do you know what I mean? Always ask yourself, why am I doing it this way? Dependent on where the players are at, where the team's at, what the needs are. And just going back a few comments before, Yas, I think you made a point that really resonated with me. One thing that I've really sort of focused on in my own coaching over the past 2 or 3 years is this idea of co-design. So using the players or the athletes to inform what constraints we need to focus on in the practice. But straight away, that's challenging because in rugby, you might have more than 20 players. You know, even in football, you've got a lot of players. So, and I'm not saying every player can positively contribute to that. And I do think, again, that in humans generally are constrained, aren't they, by the way they get schooled in the UK, anyway, I'm talking, the way they're educated through school and college and university. It's very, here's some knowledge.
Yeah.
You take it away. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, some players, I think, struggle with that because the role of a coach is to give them the answers and tell them what to do.
Well, that, so that's the been perception, a challenge, isn't it? Yeah. That is the perception. And I think it is a great point worth making, because then I think one of the things that's interesting, I mean, I just, as you're speaking, thinking about the way I coach and some of the things that people often describe in the way I coach, you ask a lot of questions. And I don't know whether it's good to have this belief, but I've got a belief that almost, you know, everyone's got the answers if you ask them the right question. And as time goes and you start to understand which questions work well, but actually coming back to what you said, really a lot of people haven't been, I think just human beings generally, we don't really get an open and honest environment in which we can feel safe enough to answer questions and without the fear of getting it wrong. Or at least thinking that we might get it wrong, even if there is no definitive answers, right?
Yeah. Well, there's a power balance, isn't there? Even if your local park with an under sevens team, the immediate, as soon as you start that session or before and after or throughout that season, there's a power balance. You're the coach. You've got an influence over that, those young players, those young boys and girls. Or even, you know, let's take it one step further. It's an academy. Essentially, the players are your decision, aren't they? You can choose their future, so or not. So there's a power balance there immediately, and that's problematic. And I'm not suggesting all coaches exploit that subconsciously or consciously at all, but there is, and you're never going to get away from that. So, you know, and it's back to the way they're educated at school, or we're educated at school. So it is a challenge. I just think if you're going to adopt that, or you're going to consider using some of those coaching strategies, behaviours, whatever you want to call it, I just think you need to be mindful that's going to take a long time to embed, to properly embed it into a coaching environment. I mean, I've just documented my experience of doing this with a performance team through published work. And so it was over a 2-year period, and it was a real challenge. So and I'll just give you a brief overview, but you get some players that sort of take it as an opportunity to sort of rule the roost. More domineering players will just take centre stage and it's all about them. And the probably less confident players just get lost in that process. So, and I've got no answers, by the way, but it's just a continuous process of evaluating how the players are interacting with that, how they're feeling. So I was just using simple things like after every session, we'd do like an anonymous Google poll. I'd have regular individual meetings with the players, getting the feedback. Would stop certain players giving feedback in group team meetings because we knew they'd dominate it. So it's a real challenge. The other thing as well, you're not always getting in good insights. So you think, all right, I'm going to listen to this individual because that's what we're doing. You know, we want people to contribute. But the insights are just like, I'm not so sure about that. I don't understand where that's come from.
There's obviously a lot of people going to be listening to this now thinking, well, you know, I'd love to create an environment like that. And I just want to kind of take it back a second before you provide an example of what you mean there. But you know, you talked there earlier about co-design, and I think it's so important that a point worth making is not every single session has to be based on every single player. That's just a way of doing things, right? Because you know, it might be that actually, do you know what, put on a rotor or a schedule of some sort where actually got a squad of 18, right? You three are going to be heading up the co-design piece, because there's obviously different learning opportunities in there. And I think, like you said, it's a constantly a process of evaluating, reflecting, re-implement, plan, do, review, right? So I guess, you know, on that, if you know, give me some examples of the insights piece, because, you know, you're right, you can have sometimes.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Last questions, or you can look to kind of dig into the players' insights. And but I think that's the beauty of it sometimes, because you want to know, oh, well, what do they think? And yeah, you want to know for good reason. But actually, even if you don't get the insight, I think it's important for them to understand that actually that insight there.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing, but actually it wasn't that useful. Because you're actually trying to educate them on what might be considered useful in the future, right?
I wouldn't say educate. I think that's I don't mean to
No, of course.
Disappoint, but it's like, I think that's a bit condescending. I think it's more about a reciprocal relationship between the players and the coach. That's where I was trying to go with it. I mean, just to give it context, I mean, this was a high performing team that was preparing for a prestigious competition. So, you know, these are adults that have been playing this particular sport for a long time. So to give you the sort of nuts and bolts of it, where we've sort of started was, right, we're like, right, we want you to develop the principles of play, the framework for playing. So we just handed it over and we had no involvement. So what the players came up with, and we sort of guided what we wanted a little bit, but we was like, right, we want some pillars of performance. So what are we doing in attack? What are we doing in defence, and what are we doing in transition? And we didn't have any involvement with that, and they fed that back in, you know, like a team meeting. And then we was like, right, so we refined it because, you know, a few points were similar, and we've got clarity, and that took a long time. So, you know, what does go forward with support mean, or what does support actually mean? And all these buzzwords you'll have in different sports, you know, let's get clarity on that. And that probably took 6 months. And then it was, right, let's start thinking of sessions we can use to focus on these points. And it was almost coming up with a plan of, you know, so this was a cycle for a World Cup, but early on in the piece, there was lots of what we would call generality of practice, where it wasn't specific or, you know, specificity of practice. It was just general. So a lot of the time, this was playing games that looked nothing like the sport, the target sport. It was multi-directional, just random games, where what we were trying to do is sort of perturb the sort of traditional way of playing, break that, and just creating better team synergies. And over time, we sort of got to where we wanted to. And then as we got sort of the last year of before the World Cup, we would have more what we call specificity of practice. So more rehearsal of things, you know, more practice that you were talking about that would look like the game. And that's not to say we didn't go back to what would you probably call development or generality of practice, but we were continuously moving between the two. And we sort of went through that process, but continuously getting feedback from the players, using performance analysis in the games to say, look, you know, and getting some data so we could say, you know, this is where we're at. These are the things we're trying to achieve. Really technical, not technical, but really tactical things where we've developed what we think is a good threshold around, and we're getting feedback on that. So, you know, and I remember actually we had a really sort of, what would you call it? A challenging meeting is the best way, where a few of the senior players, so these are top level players, were getting quite frustrated and like, look, we get what we're trying to do here, but we need to go back to some of this, which would be a very, a very sort of traditional way of playing where the game was focused on a few individuals. So we had to move, we had a balance of moving between a certain way of playing, which we termed power game, and then another way. So, and we would move between these ways of playing in game. Yeah. So I don't know if that helps you. Is that?
No, 100%. And I think it's just interesting because, you know, there's a few different things that are flying through my head as you speak. And then one of the things is people want to feel comfortable. So that they you know, by just going off what they've said there, you know, those senior players are probably, they probably have been, and it'd be interesting to see if there's any, you know, how much insight there was there around it. Is it because they're the senior players and they've been around for longer, they have an appreciation for maybe that way of coaching, that they've kind of felt, actually, you know, that's what we're comfortable with, where maybe some of the younger players, whether it be because they weren't confident enough or to, you know, maybe step up and say something, or maybe they just haven't got that experience around what that looked like. And I guess where I'm going with this is that we've got to be careful at the same time when, I guess, bringing different approaches to players, and in that sometimes they might think they prefer one method or another because maybe their experience with a particular method or strategy that was used wasn't a positive one, not because it was the wrong method necessarily, but the way in which it was delivered or implemented just didn't go to plan. So maybe, you know, there was a coach who tried to use some Q&A with an individual, but actually the Q&A was very, very close, and there wasn't a safe environment for them to kind of really answer the question, and therefore they've kind of disassociated themselves from the idea of Q&A being an effective measure of or effective strategy for coaching, right? I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I think any human being wants to feel safe, don't they? Whether they're in a family unit, a work, you know what I mean? So if in a coaching context, you know, people want to feel secure and safe, certainly in a performance environment, because you might not be here tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? So there's that element of it, isn't there, I think? Just because it might be what we, you know, a sexy approach to doing things, it might be some novel or what we might think is contemporary, probably isn't. You know, using Q&A or whatever it might be, more of a player-led type thing, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily what the players want. They might need it, though. That's different, because I do think, you know, if we think about, you know, a certain sort of theoretical, or the way I'd unpack that from a theoretical perspective is through something called ecological psychology. And I do think if we're continuously in an environment where we're told what to do, we've got no autonomy, there's no agency, I do think you start to see certain behaviours over time. Whereas if you're in an environment where you're encouraged to do that, work things out for yourself, be engaged, mentally and physically engaged, you're not always looking at the coach for the answer. I do think over time you see a different type of individual, a more responsive, can see things in the game, are looking for things, just a different type of athlete. So they might not want it. I don't stop asking me questions, stop doing this, I don't like it, you're making me feel uncomfortable. But I think, you know, certainly if you're trying, I know it's a bit different to maybe working with in a participation setting, but if you're trying to get an outcome, a result, i.e. win something, I do think that you need to be a bit maybe brave, persistent around using some of those methods, definitely. Yeah.
It's interesting. As you're speaking, it kind of just goes back to, it takes my mind to what I kind of say is my ideal type of player or athlete. In that, when I'm working with any athlete, typically, obviously, you want them to get better. But, you know, the kind of the go-to model that I want to go for is someone who's technically, tactically and physically proficient, but psychologically and socially confident, to become an interdependent athlete. Interdependent meaning, in this case, they're aware enough to understand when they have an answer for the problem or an identified problem, but they're also confident enough to understand and recognize, actually, this is where I need coach to plug in. So it's almost that kind of like that well-rounded, you know, that holistic approach, if you like, to what that is. And it's just them understanding, when do I need the coach's help, as opposed to when do I want the coach's help, and what that might mean for them in their stage of development, recognizing that, yeah, I might want coach's help because I know coach might have an answer for this and speed this up for me. But actually being aware enough to say, have I exhausted my options here yet? Have I really dug deeper in terms of my thinking and establishing what's actually happening here and providing a solution for myself, if that makes sense. And I think it's just really interesting. I think the one thing that I always go back to is, does this only have to apply in high performance environments, right? Because you mentioned there about participation sports. And I think, well, eventually they get to a point where you still want to develop, right? I mean, once you set the setting, you create the environment where, you know, if it is participation, they come in, they're having fun and whatnot. Even within that, they can still develop.
Yeah. Say that again, yeah. Sorry.
No, I was just saying that even within those participation environments, they can still develop, yeah. Right? So it's almost, I think sometimes we get to a point where with coaches that are maybe in participation environments, it's almost just about good enough. Yeah, they're enjoying it. Yeah, but you can still develop and enjoy it, right? And it can still take them to another level, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I suppose it's what, if you're thinking about that specifically, that environment, you know, what's the aim of it? What are you trying to do? It's you want people to develop in the sports sense, but yeah, then there's all different manner of things you could develop personally, you know. So I mean, the only challenge there, I think, though, is, or because these are going to be volunteers, probably parents, you know, is it fair to have to it lump that on a volunteer coach? You're expecting all these different things. I'm not so sure it is. If you keep coming back every week, not because mum or dad makes them go there, but they want to, for me, that's enough. You know, I've got two daughters that engage in sport, and one's just stopped swimming, had enough of it, and I can see why. But she wants to do, interestingly, she wants to do dance because, well, she takes part, but she wants to do even more dance because it's a very totally different environment to swimming, you know. So, you know, I think maybe if we are talking specifically about participation sport, I don't know, I'm a bit, the way I think about that, you know, the main thing for me would be, do they want to go back each week? And if they do, then that's a good environment. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's spot on. I think just another side note on that, you know, I'm just thinking back from my own experiences, the amount of times where maybe people have gone in thinking, I just want to come back each week, it's participation, but they've never really been stretched and challenged to understand that actually there could be more here. And not to say that you have to force them down a high performance route, but they've never been given the platform to recognize that actually they could be doing more than that. I just think back to a time when I was working with a university team, and you know, with university, they've got like first team, second team, third team, fourth team, got, you know, God knows how many teams they've got in some of these environments, but where players in the third or fourth team that were just there from a participation standpoint never actually got looked at as options for maybe the second or the first team. So when you start having these conversations with them, obviously these players are slightly older, but when you start having these conversations with them, it's like, oh, wow, actually, I never actually considered that. No one's ever told me that I might be good enough for that. Do you know what I mean? And it's just sometimes, I guess, exposing them to new things and new opportunities. And I think that's what, you know, for me, if we go back to the top of the conversation, we're talking about definitions of coaching and what that looks like. For me, that's what it is, right? It's just always, I always say, my role as a coach is to expose you to things that you didn't think were possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what you just said there, I think that's a better way of framing it. Because, you know, going back to what we're just talking about, I mean, you know, I talk about wanting to go back every week, even if you're playing in an academy, you should be feeling like that. That's not an excuse to, oh, I should put up with bad coaching or poor behaviour or whatever. But I think that's a better way of putting it, of framing this topic or discussion point, is that your role as a coach is to sort of push the boundaries. And that doesn't mean it's performance oriented. And what I mean by that is, oh, we've got to beat the win on the week or whatever. It's just, again, it's back to practice, isn't it? You can still create practices that are developing a whole range of skill sets. It doesn't automatically mean straight away you need to become aggressive or really authoritarian. You know what I mean? So, you know, you can soon create practices that are really challenging, fun, engaging. There's competition in it. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, but that's, and I think that, Yaz, is what I mean by, you know, we need a more sophisticated understanding of practice. You know, because I think quite quickly you can start pushing and challenging people through the way you design practice. It can have lots of elements to it. It could have a, you know, we were talking before, weren't we, about the FA four corner model. You know, it could have a psychological aspect. It could have a social aspect. It could have a, you know, a tactical aspect. So, yeah, I think that can be achieved through practice design. But I don't think it mean, to me anyway, it doesn't mean that, right, this is now performance. We need to start, you know, being a, oh, it's dead serious now. You've got to listen more. And no, I'm a child. Like, I don't want to listen to you. I want to play, or I want to do, and I want to, do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I don't know. I think, but what you, the point you made there is definitely a better way of framing that for me. Yeah. Mm. Pushing boundaries. No,
I think, yeah, 100%. I think that's what it's all about, right? And I think I guess the note that I would add to that, just from a coaching perspective generally, is or more from a personal development standpoint, is if you want that, you know, in order for them to be pushing it, in order for you to get to a point where you're pushing boundaries for them, you also need to be pushing boundaries for yourself in understanding what else is possible, what are the things that you haven't considered. And I think this is where, you know, I encourage, kind of similar to what you said earlier on, cross-pollination and looking at different sports, looking at different coaches in different environments and trying to understand. But, and I think, you know, you mentioned it earlier around the why behind what you're doing. But I think, you know, to go one step further on that, it's actually having an understanding of the what for the why, meaning, well, what's your why based on? And not just saying, oh, because this is a feeling or a thought, actually, have you got anything substantial that you can kind of hold up and say, actually, here's some, if you like, evidence to support my why?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I know this has been a hot topic on Twitter or whatever it's called now, but I am a firm believer. So the what, you know, for me, that is, you've got to have a framework, some sort of framework in place that guides how you might design practice, how you might use, you know, skill acquisition practices, performance analysis. So, and this is, I mean, this is probably a little bit more for more experienced coaches that have engaged with literature and have maybe tried applying literature, because it isn't easy. It has to have context. So I would always be guided by a theoretical framework, whichever is your persuasion. But that's the way I would work, because it also protects you against, oh, there's this new coaching idea or this fad, or technology is a big thing now, isn't it? Huge. Like, oh, there's this app on whatever, try this new app, but, well, does it align to this theoretical framework I'm using? You know, how does it work with that? Can we use the theoretical framework or some principles of it to implement or utilize this technology better? You know, how is it protecting us from these different ideas? And I just think, as a coach, that's a really good way to design, inform, evaluate practice.
I think you're spot on. And I think what it does do is it gives you a point of reference, right? In the way that you can kind of look at maybe what you were doing in comparison to what you're now doing and see where things have further developed. So I think having that piece to kind of support the why and not just base it on just observation and just, if you like, memory recall, you know, you can keep a track of it. And I think it's interesting, you know, I think back to some of the stuff that I used to do when I first started coaching, and I'm sure you'd be the same. You think, blimey, what was I doing? But yeah, it's one of them ones, right? The more you know, the more you know, well, if you knew better, you'd do better, right? And I think that's probably the biggest challenge that, you know, I'd throw to coaches and really get them to start thinking about in this conversation as well, is that what can you take away from the conversation today that A, maybe has kind of confirmed some stuff for you? What is something that you thought, actually, that's quite interesting? And then just, you know, the challenge would be, if you found something interesting in the conversation, how do you intend on applying it? As you've just said, taking the literature, taking the insights, taking the information and actually putting it into practice. And obviously what does that look like in your context? And I think it's equally just as important to understand that actually might be some really, really useful bits that come from whatever I've engaged with, whether it's this podcast or elsewhere, and understanding that that's really useful, it's really insightful, but actually the context which I'm currently in is probably not the right context to maybe apply that specific thing in.
Yeah, exactly that. Key word there, Yaz, for me is context. So the points you were making there, what really resonated me, so this is going to sound really nerdy, but when I was back to this team I've recently worked with, when was actually in competition at the World Cup. So I had probably three or four papers that, and before, through the preparation, that I used to refer to on a regular basis. So after awkward conversations, after heated meetings, I'd be like, yeah, are they right? Like, where are we at here? What? And I'd refer back. So, and just sort of check and challenge myself. But the key point with all this for me, if we're wanting coaches to try and apply whatever it is, some ideas from theory, models of practice, whatever, it has to have context. So if it's in a book, in a journal article, sat on a shelf somewhere, it's got no context. It's just on a bit of paper. You need to give it context and try it in your environment, because as you've said, like, you're working with different individuals, different players, different expectations, different challenges. So you've got to try these things and give it context to really make sense of this knowledge. You know, so it becomes experiential knowledge. And then, and that's actually where how we should be working as academics. We should be working directly with coaches and it's not in a hierarchical sense, because coaches are in a lab every time they step on the field or on the court or poolside. That's their lab. That's where they're testing, evaluating, developing data, you know, experiential data. And academics should be involved in that reciprocal process. You know, if we want to understand more about coaching, that's where all the questions are coming from. So next time you step on a field coaching football players, you'll be generating research questions. Why has that happened? Why has he reacted like that? Why is she doing that? You know, they're questions that need answering. You know, so it's definitely a reciprocal relationship that we need to focus on, 100%.
No, I fully agree with you. And I think the key takeaway message from me there is less so about the questions that are coming up, but more so about the need for coaches to be aware of what questions are coming up. Because those questions, like you said, they're there, whether we identify them or not. And I think, you know, the coaches will be looking at certain things and they probably will be, you know, noticing things. Mm. But whether or not they're actually asking the questions to themselves or even in a outright context with the players, then obviously it's a different matter. But I think first and foremost is ask yourself, what are the problems that are existing in the environment? What are the observations I'm actually making? And actually genuinely try to be aware of what those situations might be.
Yeah. Well, I think doing that anyway, it just makes you more self-aware as a coach. I mean, look, and this isn't a criticism, but when I think back to when I first started coaching, I was like, just anxious about, where's the balls? Like, how many cones we got? Like, all I was interested in is what you might call operational things, like, where's the kit? What pitch are we training on? And I was, do you know what I mean? I was just blagging my way through a session, hoping that no situation arose where I needed to answer a complex question or, you know, give what players might think is a good answer. But I think as you get more experience, you clearly you move away from that, and you know that's you don't even think about any of that. You're more interested in the practice, identifying you know needs of players, you know working out strategies to be better. And I think when you're in that situation, you're probably in a place where you can be more observant, more self-reflective, and you're seeing different things because all that stuff's just it just happens. You just become skilled at it. You don't even think about it. But and I think when you get there, and I know when I'm working in an environment and I'm sort of moving between being a coach and a researcher, you just become aware of so much more. And it definitely improves you as a coach, 100%. Yeah.
No, I could just echo that. And I think just as time's gone, just try to give more consideration for all the things that actually, like I said at the top of the conversation, that happens with players. It's what are the variables which impact on my ability to perform and execute actions. So I think the same applies for coaching. How much are we considering what's actually going to have an influence on our ability to perform as coaches and support the players in our environment? So. No, really, really good stuff. Martin, I'm conscious of time and I'm really, really grateful for the time that you've given me so far. But I'm just wondering if there's any key takeaways from yourself around anything that we've discussed. What would those be for coaches to maybe think about and really tackle?
Yeah. How do we digest this, Yaz? I think, so I'll set myself a challenge. Let's say three key takeaways. I'm trying not to say answers that we get all the time, you know, like don't stop learning and all that. I think value the insight of players, even if you're working with an under sevens, and I don't know how young you go in football or working in any sport. You know, obviously you're going to change the detail and level of that, but always value the insight of players. That's really important. And become comfortable at doing that, because at times you get told things you don't like and it will make you feel uncomfortable. Well, that's good. That's I'd almost see that as a KPI. If that happens, then something good's happening in that environment. That interaction between you and the players is good. So that's one. The other one would be I don't know who this is aimed at, but I think understand what your game model is. So if it's football, because I'm guessing there's a lot of football coaches are going to listen to this. If it's football, understand what your game model is. What I mean by that is how are you trying to play the game, and appreciate that can change. But and then understand or work out ways you're going to deliver that. But be mindful that if it's very hierarchical driven, i.e. it's all about the coach, that's going to be problematic. So you need to understand how players can help you deliver that game model. And you that's something you can work out as a coach, and you'll know depending on a whole range of different factors. So that's two. Three, I would say just value, because I'm again, if people are engaging with this, I'm guessing they're going to be reading and looking at literature. I would say if you are going to engage with literature, it can have value, but you need to give it context and be patient with that. And appreciate maybe not everybody's got time, because it could mean losing a job if you are in an environment where that's not a constraint, just be patient and try things, evaluate it, self-reflect, speak to people that have written things and say, oh, you know, I've read your article or your book chapter or whatever, and I'm trying things, but this is what I'm finding. Because that could be a really good process for a coach to go through and give the research people some ideas about where to go next, you know, and equally the researchers can help the coaches as well. So that would be three takeaways.
And I think there's a lot in there, and I think, you know, just to kind of wrap it all up for me, it is just really plan, do, review. Literally put things into place, have a plan, understand why you're doing it, what does it look like, you know, kind of tallying into what you said there, and having a clear understanding of why I'm doing it in that way, and within the whole thing, when might it change and for who it might it change for? So I think, you know, there's some great stuff in there, Martin. I really appreciate, again, you know, your time taken to have this conversation with me. And there's been loads of key things for me to think about, and hopefully the same for the listeners as well. So massive thank you, Martin. Thank you again.
No worries, Yaz. Glad to chat with you. It's been enjoyable for me. So yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.